You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. John Burton is a larger-than-life figure in California politics, particularly for Democrats. Serving in both the California State Legislature and Congress and the House of Representatives, Burton was a strong advocate for civil rights, environmental protection, and health care reform. And he led the California Democratic Party as its chairman for almost a decade. Outside of politics, he was a fierce advocate for foster youth, establishing the John Burton Foundation for Children Without Homes. And a new memoir about his legacy comes out this month. It's titled I Yell Because I Care, The Passion and Politics of John Burton, which is authored by Burton himself alongside former Sacramento Bee journalist Andy Farrillo. A book release is scheduled Tuesday, September 9th at the California Museum in downtown Sacramento. He joins us today along with Sarah Potter, the executive director of John Burton Advocates for Youth. They're launching a new program to honor Burton's legacy, allowing young adults with lived experiences in foster care or homelessness to work inside the state capitol. Sarah and Andy, welcome to Insight.
Hey, Vicky.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Well, Andy, I want to start with you. John Burton obviously has a long history in elected office and public service. How did you first cross paths with him?
Well, I never really covered him. You know, I was more of a cop guy when I worked at the Bee, you know, crime and punishment kind of stuff, you know, criminal justice. And I did have a few occasions to interview him back when I was a reporter. But the way this book came about was just about 4 years ago. He had actually approached Dan Morane, you know, the former LA Times reporter, Sacramento Bee editorial page editor, to see if Dan wanted to do it. Dan had another project going. So Dan says, hey, why don't I introduce you to this guy who lives across the street from me named Farrillo. And he actually kind of liked the name Farrillo because he was a big baseball fan. And he goes back to the, you know, rooting for the Brooklyn Dodgers back in the 50s or knowing about the Brooklyn Dodgers and knowing Carl Farrillo. And, oh, so Farrillo, you got a Farrillo here. Okay, so I'll meet him. And so Dan introduced us. We went out to lunch. We kind of hit it off. And I immediately thought this guy would be a great story, telling his story of his life in politics and beyond in his style, which is pretty interesting and fun. And so that's how we got going.
Yeah, it is a long history. He was in state politics from the 1960s, went over to the House and Congress, went back to state politics throughout the 80s and the 90s into the early 2000s, then became the chair of the Democratic Party for California from 2009 to 2017, did it in the 70s as well. But as you say, you were a crime beat reporter. You didn't cover politics in depthly. Do you think that actually gave you a unique perspective when helping John Burton with this memoir?
It probably would have helped if I was a poli-sci major in college and I liked politics. I think the fact that I was interested in kind of a fan of politics helped a lot. The unique aspect of covering crime and police and things like that would have helped me understand John better because he was a real street guy. He just had this feel for the streets that I don't think most politicians have. He was a bartender in San Francisco and, you know, was living the life on North Beach in a real great time period before he got into politics. I think that the perspective that I brought helped just in that I had this appreciation for the weird things that happened on the street. And John was definitely a street guy. No question about that.
What stood out to you about his political style?
More than anything, his ability to reach out across the aisle. I'd say that John was probably, if not the most liberal member of the Senate when he was the pro tem. He was right there, but he called himself a quote unquote fair partisan, and he sought out fair partisans from the right. And he, you know, it's really interesting. He got along very well with John Burgess. One of his best friends in the legislature, in the state Senate, was Ross, the guy from Orange County, one of the quote-unquote cavemen of the 1978 Proposition 13 year, very conservative guy, and Ross Johnson, sorry about that, and John and him got along together famously. They would sing Big Rock Candy Mountain together on the Senate floor and try and work out what they could, because, you know, Ross was a fair partisan as well, and John just kind of sought that out in people.
Given that he's in his 90s now, working on a memoir with you that's going to come out next week, what did you learn about, as he reflects on his life and career, what drove him to the work of elected office? Why was he so passionate about public office?
What drove him more than anything was wanting to give voice to the voiceless, mostly poor people, the blind, the aged, and the disabled, working people. People who he felt their voices were not being heard in the halls of power, and that was the beginning and the end for him in politics. You know, he made a lot of deals and pushed bills, you know, that expanded, you know, parks and protected wildlands and protected the coast, things like that. But the beginning and the end was poor people in his district. He represented a lot of people who lived in like the single room occupancy hotel south of Market in San Francisco. People were living off of hot plates and going down to the hall to the bathroom. And those are the people that he, you know, carried in his heart pretty much every day when he went to work.
Sarah, I want to turn to you because you had John Burton Advocates for Youth. How did you first become aware of Burton and his work?
So interestingly, I became aware because we have this really wonderful and informative weekly policy newsletter that we send out every Tuesday, and it always has the latest on what bills and budget items are being considered for young people who are experiencing foster care or homelessness. And it's just been a wealth of information. So when I first started in the field and just finished my social work degree, I remember coming across this newsletter and looking forward to it every Tuesday, because it really helped me gauge kind of what was happening at the system level that would have implications for the young people that I was working with. And then beyond that, I, you know, decided to join the JBAY team during the pandemic, and found that I really loved this work and loved the culture of our organization, everything that Senator Burton had sort of passed on, all his institutional knowledge around policymaking and how to really make sure that the young people we serve have a voice in policymaking and that their needs are being addressed.
Help us visualize the work that you do.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked quite a bit about Senator Burton's career, and you know, he spent decades in public service, and instead of enjoying kind of a quiet, nice retirement, he decided to found John Burton Advocates for Youth, or JBAY as we're known across the state. And our mission is to improve the quality of life for young adults in California who have experienced foster care or homelessness. And we do this through a variety of different mechanisms. We do a lot of training, we do advocacy, we do research. And frankly, we have fundamentally transformed the lives of foster and homeless youth across the state. We've championed 55 legislative reforms, and we've secured over $3.5 billion in new state and federal investments.
Do you work closely with him? Is he so actively involved in this organization?
He is. He will call me and he will tell me what I, you know, who I need to call to get something done. And he's always sort of keeping his finger on the pulse and helping guide us behind the scenes. But his fingerprint or thumbprint on our work is enormous. And just as an example, Vicki, you know, around the same time that JBAY was founded, I aged out of the foster care system. So I turned 18, graduated from high school, and emancipated from child welfare all in the same month. And I remember kind of walking across the stage and earning my diploma and shaking the Board of Supervisors' hands. They gave me $500 and basically said, you know, good luck, kid, you're on your own. And when I think about the changes that JBAY has made, you know, and all of the bills that we've successfully advocated for since then, things like extending foster care to age 21 so that there's more support in those critical transition years, making sure that there's a housing array available to young people, and accessing financial aid, now the first in the nation foster youth tax credit, all of these things. I know that what I experienced is not the same reality for young people coming up behind me today. And that has everything to do with John and his ability to work across the aisle and to advocate for those who just simply don't have a voice.
Yeah. And your work too at JBA as yes. well, Sarah. I want to get to the title and the cover of the book. So the title of the book, I Yell Because I Care. And the cover is pretty spicy, too. He is flipping a double bird at a podium. Tell us about what inspired this title and this cover, Andy.
Well, sure. The I Yell Because I Care, when he was the Senate pro tem, they had T-shirts made up. About you know, with that slogan, it was kind of like his his mantra. It was like who he was, because he's a very intensely emotional, intensely passionate guy. Also known for his language, which sometimes can be pretty colorful, and he was he went through life on the top of his lungs. Certainly went through politics on the top of his lungs, and so people had to share that passion as well. And that's where the I Yell Because I Care came from. The picture was taken from his last night as the chair of the state Democratic Party, and it was May of 2017. And this was in the first months of the first Trump administration, and Democrats were wondering, how they were going to respond to Trump. And Nancy Pelosi had just given a pretty, intense speech in introducing John, in terms of what Democrats were up against and what their, where they needed to be, where their fight had to come from, how they had to lead the opposition. And then as the evening's wrapping up, there had been a number of testimonials to John from people that were there. And so he's getting his plaudits at the end of the night. This is almost his encore. And he sees the women that were signing, for the people who can't speak, for the deaf. And then somehow that inspired him to all right, all together now. And then uses an expletive. And then towards Trump, and then boom, there go the middle fingers on both hands, and that was his salute to Trump on in May of 2017.
Yeah, colorful, not only in a different language, sign language, and also verbally as well.
Yeah,
if you ask him, he was ordering two chicken salads in that photo.
Very funny. Andy, Nancy Pelosi actually wrote the foreword for this memoir. Was that an easy ask?
It was. It was an easy ask. They go back a long way. And John's brother, Philip, was the legendary congressman out of San Francisco, one of the most consequential congressmen of post-World War II period. And then Philip was the consequential congressman. Philip died, and he was replaced by his wife, Sala. And a few years after Philip died, Sala got cancer, and she's in the last days of her life. And John and Nancy Pelosi were not really that tight. They knew each other. They were kind of in the same circles, but not that tight. And Sala calls them both to her bedside as she's dying. And she basically says, I want Nancy to replace me. And John, I want you to make it happen. And John at that time was out of politics, and he kind of got him back into it to a great extent, because he was her campaign chair in her first election, and they have been very, very tight ever since, joined at the hip even, and deeply love each other in regards to the work that they've done in politics for working people, for the environment. And so it was actually pretty easy, because they were pretty tight for a long time.
Does his colorful and loud persona in elected office also transfer to his personal life, Andy?
Yeah, it does. He and I I was the on the receiving end in the course of the construction of this book more than once, and pretty much a regular basis for a long time. But it's it never bothered me. That's just who he was. I kind of grew up in that environment. You know, when I grew up, my father was very similar, and so it was no problem to me. But that was part of his workaday world, his style.
Yeah, Sarah, I see you nodding along as well.
Yes, we love and appreciate it too. The colorful language, it brightens our day more days than not. So
given that it's been about two decades since he was in office, Sarah, why do you think younger people, younger generation should know about his work?
You know, I think that what's so fascinating about his work is his ability to work across the aisle, to find consensus, to seek dissent, learn from dissent, and in some ways really kind of proactively figure out what, you know, other people are thinking and really try to understand their intentions so that we can work together. And I think that's something that's really missing in today's political climate. And so there's a lot we can all learn, especially folks in the younger generations who are interested in potentially someday running for office or working in advocacy.
Andy, do you think that his passion in politics and how he displayed that, does that fit in today's political world? That being able to be that colorful and yet reach across the aisle in the spirit of bipartisanship, would John Burton Farewell today in Congress or today at the state capitol?
I mean, I don't think there's any question that he would fare well. And I mean, there obviously is still a lot of passion in politics on both sides today. There's no doubt about that. But what would make him more effective today is, you know, he would be able to find people to work with. Granted, it's quite a bit different now than it was when John was in office, when there was a lot of socializing going on between the two sides. I think that there was more respect for each other then. I think that, you know, there have been some wild cards thrown in the last couple of years where some of the institutional structures have frayed a little bit, and that makes it more difficult. There's a lot more distrust, but I'm pretty sure that he would. I mean, he wouldn't be backing down to nobody. I'll tell you that right now. But he would find a way. He would find people on the other side to work with and cooperate with.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Sarah Potter and Andy Farrillo about John Burton's legacy in California politics. A new memoir, I Yell Because I Care, is being released this month. Sarah, you talked to us about your work for the John Burton Advocates for Youth. You also have a lot of work on policy at the state capitol, as you laid out. Tell us about the John Burton Fellowship. What are you hoping to accomplish with this?
Yes. So we are really hoping to expand opportunities for young people who have lived experience in foster care to have a seat at the table where policy is made. And, you know, I think a good reminder for folks, too, that when we're talking about young people who've been in foster care, they are wards of the court. In practice and in law, they are the children of the state. And often they really don't have a voice at the highest level. Yet all of these policies and all of these laws have direct implications on their lives. So what the John Burton Fellowship will hopefully do will expand formalized opportunities for young people with lived experience who have recently graduated from college, the opportunity to really work in the legislature, work at the in the assembly, work in the Senate, work at the executive branch and potentially even the judicial. So there's a vision and a dream there, and this is something that we know Senator Burton's very passionate about and wants to see happen.
You said soon. How soon is this kicking off?
I don't want to get ahead of my partners and make any formal announcements just yet, but we're looking in the near term and hopefully we'll be able to talk a little bit more about it at our event at the California Museum in Sacramento next Tuesday, September 9th. We're still working out some details, but the hope is it could be something that's on the table for 2026. I'm going to put that out there into the universe and and will it to happen.
Wonderful. And so these young adults would essentially be paired with a lawmaker.
Yes, essentially. Be paired with a lawmaker and get a lot of exposure and experience. And in the same way, I think, really share a unique perspective, a real lived expertise to the policies.
In the last few minutes that we have, I do want to talk about the book release that's happening at the California Museum on Tuesday, September 9th, as Sarah laid out. Andy, what would you like people to know about it? They're going to be showing up.
Oh, I don't know about the release. Just Sarah, you should probably take that one. I'm kind of not. I haven't been involved as much into planning there, but Sarah, you take that one
because I'm not. Yeah, really, sure. Not much. So the book release next week at the California Museum is really just a time to come together to celebrate and mark the monumental sort of occasion, which is the release of John's book. So at the same time that we're celebrating the book, we're also raising funds for J-Bay. So all of the ticket sales and even some of the book sales, the portion of those books will go back to our organization and help us achieve our mission. Well, and it's just going to be fun. It's a celebration.
Will he be there?
That is the hope. Yeah. We will see.
Wonderful.
We will see. He's a busy man and you know, we're still to be determined.
Yeah, that's completely understandable. Andy, I want to leave the last word to you. What did you enjoy and get out of putting this memoir together?
Well, the thing that was just so great, it was like basically more than a graduate level college course, just learning, you know, the way politics works and the how it can be so personal and how things get done and how even when there is intense animosity between people from opposing points of view, oftentimes they reach this consensus. You know, one great story was like when John Burton was right when he just got elected pro tem of the Senate, he'd had years of acrimony with Pete Wilson, who was the Republican governor, and just years of not getting along, John calling him names and problems. So the governor, Wilson, has Ken Matty, who's the Republican leader of the Senate, into his office and says, you know, what have I got to do with Johnny here? How are we going to take care of him? You know, how can we get past this? And Matty tells Governor Wilson, just take care of his poor people. Just take care of the poor people and you'll be fine. And the last year of Wilson's being governor, he did exactly that. I mean, the times were better. They weren't fighting a budget deficit every year. But the last year when Wilson was governor, they had money. They were able to give a few extra bucks to SSIS, SP people. And he and John Burton got along great the last year after years of acrimony.
Yeah, I can just hear that this was, you really got a kick out of putting this memoir together and helping John Burton.
It was a blast. I mean, it was just a blast being able to hang out with him and go with him to some of his haunts. He took me on the North Beach stroll, you know, places, you know, I did this here and that there, and I was a bartender here, and this is where I met what's her name. And it was just really great. It was a great trip into history.
Andy and Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you
for having us.
Andy Ferrillo is a former Sacramento Bee journalist who co-authored the memoir, I Yell Because I Care, The Passion and Politics of John Burton, alongside Burton himself. He is also a co-author. Sarah Potter is the executive director of the John Burton Advocates for Youth, J-Bay, which is launching a new program allowing young adults with lived experience in foster care or homelessness to work inside the state capitol. A book release is scheduled Tuesday, September 9th at the California Museum in downtown Sacramento. Still ahead, food insecurity remains a global issue, but a new book argues that existing systems, misguided policies are standing in the way of a more bountiful future. We'll get a taste of the book called Food Fight. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.